When you see how precious life is, I know it sounds like a massive cliche, but as a passionate breast cancer surgeon, I see how precious life is and how short it is and how, you know, you turn around the next corner and your life is changed. So I've just, A, been confident in my own skin, but confident in the fact that I've got one shot at this life and I'm not going to let other people's opinions or views impact my happiness.
Hello and welcome to the Women of the Future podcast, a podcast made in collaboration with the Women of the Future programme, a platform built to unlock a culture of kindness and collaboration among leaders, as well as support and celebrate the successes of women. I'm Kim Rowell and I won the media category at their awards in 2018 in recognition of my continued work as a commissioner, producer and children's author, particularly within the mental health remit. I'll be talking to my guests on this podcast about their careers, who or what gave them their first big break, their successes, failures, and inspirations along the way, and how they came to be a part of the Women of the Future network. Harleen Diol is a consultant oncoplastic breast surgeon for the East and North Hertfordshire NHS Trust. She has worked in the NHS for 26 years as a breast reconstruction surgeon, a supervisor for trainee surgeons, and an advisor, chair, and member of numerous committees. Harleen has dedicated her time to championing technological innovations that prioritise patient benefits as well as save costs. Also a tutor at the University of Cambridge, as well as having presented and taught live operating at conferences across the globe. Additionally, Harleen serves as a charity trustee. The recipient of the hugely prestigious Chairman's Award at the 2023 Asian Women of Achievement Awards, Harleen certainly is a force to be reckoned with.
I had a really happy upbringing. So my parents were both first generation immigrants from northern India. My dad was already living in London, so he was the first Sikh man with a turban living around London, driving his Capri, being a plush Harry. So my parents moved to Woodford Green when I was born, because my mum is now a retired school teacher and she had looked at the schools and not really looked at the community or that, but the schools were excellent. So I have an older sister and a younger brother, and we all were brought up in Woodford Green. And it was quite extraordinary because we were about 10 miles away from the nearest other real Asian family. And we were growing up in the 70s, one of three Asian families in Woodford Green. And it was great, you know, very happy. There was no question of integration with anyone else. All of the neighbours were auntie and uncle, didn't matter who they were. But then my parents struck a blinder and sent us all to the local prep school. So not only were we the only brown family where we lived, I had to wear a red beret and a red kilt and a red blazer to school every day. So we were like, hello, here we are.
That wasn't enough. Here we are.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, school was fantastic. We would, unfortunately, at the time, the National Front were quite big in the local area. So we would often get hurled racist remarks on the way to school, on the way to the bus stop. But I think at an early age, our parents, just when we would get home and talk to them about it, they would say, well, you have to stand up for yourself. And when they say, "Are you," horrible words, "go home," you know, this is your home. But I remember I was clearly a middle child, and I think I must have got quite sick of all this racial abuse. So one day I grabbed my brother and his bag and walked back home from the bus stop. And my dad was there because his car hadn't started to take us to school that day. I said, "What are you doing here?" And I said, "Well, every day the skinheads tell us to go home, so we thought we'd just come home." And he said, "No, they don't mean here, they mean your other country." But we had an understanding of racism and we had an experience of it. That was the 70s in Britain. But I think I am just very fortunate because our parents talked to us about it and stood up, told us how to really at an early age stand up for ourselves. So that was the start. But
you're saying it in such an upbeat way, which is lovely, but also the resilience there must have been quite extraordinary. And now, I guess with the benefit of age and looking back, it must have been so challenging. And I would assume also that affected you surreptitiously in some way as well. Is there an impact there?
I think you're right. There must have been, and I think that's why I say it perhaps helped me from an early age to stand up for myself. But that was how we were being brought up. We looked different. People felt that they could shout at us across the street, and I would have these conversations with my mum saying, "Why do they think this?" And it was just obviously in a very childish way. And she said, "Well, look, I'm a teacher. I teach people, and what the one thing that education does is." She would say to me, "You've always wanted to be a doctor. So when you grow up, you can operate on these people and then they'll respect you rather than, slur abuse at you." So things like that kind of stayed in my head, really. But to be honest, we were just like, okay, well, that's what they're like. But our neighbours weren't like that. And when you got to school, it was this fantastic place where everyone was treated the same in our red berets and red kilts.
So, do you feel like it did affect your vocational choices and the things that you were interested in? I suppose even at school, the subjects that you enjoyed, or do you think it infiltrated in that way, or not really?
I don't think it made any difference to what I wanted to do. I think it must have had an impact on resilience and perhaps confidence being brought up that yes, you look different, but so what? You carry on and carry on your path. But I think also my parents, I think my mum particularly was very, very clever as a teacher. And so she made sure that they, we were not well off. We lived in a tiny house, very happy family life. But filled with lots of food, obviously, because my mum's a big Indian woman. But I think that actually choosing to pay for three children to go to a private school when they really couldn't afford it was quite a big decision for my parents. And the reason is that, I remember playing football at school against the boys. And when we beat these two, my best friend Harriet and I, when we beat these boys, this little boy, obviously angry and just shouted a nasty word. So when I went home and told my mum, she said, "Well, what did you do?" And I said, "Well, he was just upset at losing." But what she did was phone the headmistress and say, "We're paying for three children in this school. This behaviour cannot be tolerated." And she said, "Yes, of course," for fear that we would be pulled out halfway through a turn back. So I think they made that choice and that helped us, definitely. But it certainly didn't make an impact on what I was going to do. Always been pretty determined.
But that personal fortitude is quite extraordinary, and it's clearly something that you've carried with you throughout your whole career. But I was interested to know, did you do any more like retail-based jobs, any work experience? What were your first jobs out of education?
So during our education, because I was born wanting to be a doctor, and when I found out what a surgeon was, that was it. That was, me at home taking things apart and putting them back
All of
together.
your dolls haven't got any heads or arms,
Oh, I
or
had no dolls. I had
oh,
no
okay,
dolls. I had cars. I would build burglar
brilliant.
alarms for my wardrobe and build telephone extensions and
Burglar
things.
alarms for your wardrobe, did you
Yes,
say?
so that my sister wouldn't go in and take my
That
stuff.
is clever, I like
But
it.
I think that. Again, my parents were very focused, as a lot of Asian parents are, and we weren't allowed to get a job until we were well on the path to getting a good education.
Okay.
I remember my mum just saying, "I don't want you to get a taste for the money at this age." I did got a job with my best friend in Budgens supermarket and just did the, just enough to get on the tube into London and go to the theatre with my friends, who are such rebels. But I think the focus was always on education, and that pleased me because I loved going to school. I think for my family, the best bit was they then paid for both my brother and sister to go to private secondary schools or public schools. And I remember passing the 11 plus, which meant I could go to the girls' grammar school that I really wanted to because it was the school that had six or eight tennis courts, and I just wanted to go to the school with tennis courts. But my parents, me passing the 11 plus was like winning the lottery at that stage.
Your parents have clearly had a big, big impact in just listening to you talk about it and the stories that you're telling, but maybe beyond their influence, is there or was there a standout moment or other people or anyone as part of your life that you would say helped mold your interests? I know you've already spoken about your passion for making things and taking things apart, and but is there anyone else or another instance or insight that really set you off on this career path?
I think the problem was that when I looked around or when I looked into the field of surgery, there were no women. And so there was nobody that really set me off on that path or was my role model. And that's perhaps why later in life I really wanted to become a role model for all women. But I think it was more just the interest. And rather than having a role model that inspired me at that young age, it was more that people constantly told me that I wouldn't be able to do something. And when you're a belligerent middle child, I would throughout my life, I've become quite sick of people telling me that I would not be able to do anything. No, you won't be able to go to Woodford County High School. You have to pass your 11 plus. Well, I'm going to. And then, you know, there were teachers that, great teachers at school that just did their job incredibly well and with a passion. So they inspired me to carry on. But I think being told no, and because I was a bit of a, probably a big mouth and probably didn't concentrate as much, when I really got to the point of doing my GCSEs and A-levels, I didn't work hard enough. And the headmistress at my secondary school at the time did not like the fact that I had then become the first non-white head girl at my school because I had been voted in by my peers and the teachers. And she clearly had it in for me and was really quite nasty just before my A-levels. And I remember very, very clearly going to get my A-level grades thinking, not so sure if I'm going to be able to go to medical school. And she had my results in her hand when I walked in instead of on the table because I hadn't got the grades I needed for medical school. And I had been so supported by my teachers at that school, where science was a really well recognized, probably the biggest department. And I'd been so inspired to do this that when she said no, I said, well, where do I sign up to come back and do my research? Because I thought, I'm not having another woman telling me, no, I can't go to medical school. And the only medical school that I really wanted to go to was the London Hospital Medical School in the slums of the East End, because we'd driven past it so much as children going into London. And I then remember very clearly just saying to my dad, look, I didn't get in. I need to go. Can you drive me to the London Hospital and I'll get the tube back? And I just sat outside the admission dean's room on a chair for hours, asking if I could see him, and explained that I had come across some negativity and I hadn't done the right, you know, hadn't worked hard enough. And so please, I think I just begged him to go there. And the reason I wanted to go there was because some family friends of my parents had said, oh, you'll never get into the London Hospital Medical School. It's got such a racist intake and blah, blah, blah. And then yet again, I thought, well, that's the only place I want to go to. So I did the year later. But I think that what I did want to say was, I know I talked about my parents because I had a happy upbringing, but my mum was quite a formidable woman. And going to the Sikh temple, or the Gurdwara, as we obviously call it, was often run by men. And I remember being about 14 at Shepherd's Bush Gurdwara, one of the big main Sikh temples in London. And there was lots of bickering between the committee and the men that run it. And I remember my mum just saying, right, stay there. We were sitting in the congregation and she got up on stage and she said, this is absolutely ridiculous. Will four women come on stage with me and we will run the Sikh temple? And that never happened before. And she then became a human rights activist. So I had that role model who never took no for an answer, but was also very happy just to speak up. And I think that then probably wanting to be a surgeon was my interest rather than having any role models. So when I was at medical school, I just heard about these great men. There weren't really any women surgeons at the London or in London at that time that I had seen. And I just thought, well, you know, if my mum can do it, I can do this.
Yeah.
But it just carried on. But really, I was taught by great men. And it was just men who realised that this young, didn't matter what I looked like, this young woman was so interested and passionate. Not the best, you know, I wasn't the best at anything. But they just realised that I had a passion and they encouraged me, supported me and allowed me to completely flourish, which was great. The problem with the family bit is that I have a younger brother who became a surgeon, an orthopaedic surgeon. And, you know, things as you get older started to change in the community, in the Asian community, because then, oh, well, your younger brother's a surgeon. Or people say, oh, yes, how are you, Mr. and Mrs. Deol? And yes, your son's a surgeon. I'm like, hello, I was one first.
Over here.
Yeah. And I think sometimes I talk about no matter how well you do in Asian families, sometimes if there's a golden boy that can take over. And when you're a middle child, you're used to that. But then I found that it was everything became for my parents about, they were still apparently supporting my career, but it was very much, well, you should help your brother, or, he's an orthopedic surgeon. And it got, for me, there was a huge change in my family that I hope you don't mind me talking about, but that was knowing that from a very young age, I was gay and had great friends who I'd talked to about this. But at no point in my teens, 20s, even 30s, did I feel that I would be able to come out to my parents, because the reaction I got, sadly, from my brother and sister was not a positive one. And it was always these awful words that are bandied around, like shame on the family. Like, what the hell is shame on the family? This is, the 20s, the noughties. Why does me being a surgeon, but being gay, why does that bring shame? That's a word that's never been used in our family. But my brother was bounding that around quite a lot. So the reason I talk about my family a lot is that they're not a huge part of my Asian family and not a huge part of my life anymore, because perhaps they think I bring shame on them. Whereas I feel quite disappointed and embarrassed about their behaviour, frankly. But because of the resilience and confidence I have in myself, and I think the integrity that I've developed over the years, it's nice to talk about my upbringing and what a happy family they were, but that's not actually the situation anymore. I have a very happy family. I have a fantastic son who I met when he was 11. I have an amazing wife, but she's a woman, obviously. She's not Sikh, and they didn't want to have any part of that. So I don't have any issue with the Asian community, apart from if they have an issue with me, same as the skinheads that called me racist slurs when I was a child. Don't band around words like shame or disgusting at me, because I will just leave and go off and have my very happy life. And that's something that I don't think people talk about enough in the Asian community. And that's why I wanted to tell you how brilliant my upbringing was. But my family looks very, very different now. It's a very small family with lots of amazing friends and a very well-educated son who's doing a PhD in space science. Do my family care? Do my parents, brother and sister care? No, they're not interested. But I have chosen to stand up for myself my whole life, thanks to a good upbringing. And sadly, it got to the point where it meant I stood up for my wife and my son and our chance to be happy in this one life against what the Asian community might think of me. Bit of a turnaround there.
Blimey,
I
Holly.
know.
You're so inspiring. I feel like I should stand up and applaud you.
Oh, gosh,
It's
no.
insane. Oh, wow. There's so much to unpack there, but I think primarily just listening to your story, the strength of character is remarkable. I'd like to think on my best day, maybe I could be some kind of version of that. But like genuinely, like wow,
Gosh, thank you.
how do you have that strength? Because that's for me listening, that's phenomenal. And the things that you've gone through, and you're so magnanimous with your love. There's a clear love for the people around you too. And yet you've been treated with disdain on occasion, even your
Oh,
women teacher
absolutely.
standing there being like, oh, look, you failed. And you've been like, you know what, sod you, I'm off to be brilliant over here, you know. But how do you, I know there's not going to be like a one word answer to this, but how do you find that strength?
I think that probably following my dream and becoming a doctor has helped that hugely, because training at the Royal London, I saw it was a trauma centre in London. So I saw how precious life is from the age of 19, 20, certainly when I became a doctor at 23. And these great male surgeons that I saw had dedicated their lives to people that were losing their life and communicating with families about the loss of their loved one. And the love of humanity is what I got from those great trainers. Apart from the space and the support for me to grow, it was what this job is. And actually, turning into or wanting to be a breast cancer surgeon was to try to improve the quality of life for women, which I wanted to be a trauma surgeon at one point, and my great inspiring tutor or surgeon, Mr. Ham at the Royal London, who just set up my career but taught me how to communicate with patients. And I think when you see how precious life is, and I know it sounds like a massive cliche, but as a passionate breast cancer surgeon, I see how precious life is and how short it is, and how, you turn around the next corner and your life has changed. So I've just, A, been confident in my own skin, but confident in the fact that I've got one shot at this life, and I'm not going to let other people's opinions or views impact my happiness. And I spend a lot of my life ensuring that I, for instance, in my team at work, I want to create an environment where we are happy, and that's done by being myself. So I think to answer your question, which I'm obviously digressing from again, it's the need to be happy and the need to be allowed to be myself. And that is really the source of anything. I'm not particularly driven to do anything. It's just that when I come across a hurdle, I won't take no for an answer, or I'll find a roundabout way. But it's just that need to be happy. And the cheesiest thing of all is just to spread a bit more happiness. Because my mum ruled with nine fists. She was like a lovable Mussolini. I've seen great surgeons roar at people and shout at people. So I've spent 30 years as a doctor and as a surgeon seeing how not to do things. And so getting to the point in your career where you can set the tone in a team and actually say, okay, well, I'm going to carry on. If I create an environment where people feel safe to talk, we talk a lot in Women of the Future in the whole campaign about kindness and collaboration. But actually, it made me think that's how I do things. I do things myself in a way that I would want to be treated. And it's all of those really basic things. If you create an environment where people feel safe and they're treated with kindness, you get the best version of them. And in our team, all we're trying to do is look after people going through a really horrendous journey of cancer and trying to make sure they're the ones that survive. And if they're not, make sure they get the best treatment. But if you create an environment of kindness, that collaboration then flows. And you can still be a great leader by doing it your own way. And that's something that's been really important to me. Just still that 10-year-old middle child wanting to be, happy.
That's so lovely. But to offer a bit of a career overview, not that you need to be told, but when you did qualify as a doctor, you were the first woman to enter the Royal London Hospital general surgical rotation in over 20 years. And also for me to just go back on your Woman of the Future biography as well, if you'll allow me. But you've
Of
worked in the
course.
NHS for 26 years as a breast reconstruction surgeon, a supervisor for trainee surgeons, and an advisor chair and member of numerous committees. You've championed technological innovations that prioritize patient benefits as well as saving costs. You're also a chaired, and how do you fit this all in? You're also a tutor at the University of Cambridge, presented and taught live operating at conferences across the globe, and serves as a charity trustee as well. That's, you can see, and
Yes.
also we should add to this, you won the Chairman's Award at the Asian Women of Achievement Awards this year, which is the highest
Yes.
accolade that they can offer. But I'm just curious, I ask on this podcast, I mean, across all of the work that you've done, is there anything
Yeah.
in particular that stands out for you or that you're particularly proud of?
So I think I don't have an unusual career for a surgeon. I remember going to the surgical interview for that rotation, and again, I was told no woman's ever got it. I thought, well, I'll go along. Borrowed a pair of shoes. In fact, my friend's shoes that I had to put tissue in the front of because they didn't fit me. But I was one in only 32 women, and I just talked about what I wanted to do. But again, the man that selected me for that, Mr. Ham, he must have seen something in me, and he had set up that rotation. But I think my career, a lot of surgeons, we love teaching, we do love people, and we care about people. So I don't think that I'm unusual as a surgeon, apart from the fact that I'm an Asian woman. And I think we all work very, very hard. So career-wise, I've never had an aspiration to be anything but me. And these things just happen along the way. And I think the reason they've happened to me is because I've taken the opportunities and I have wanted to say yes a lot more. So I think teaching is part of being a surgeon, we get taught, but the word Sikh, which is the religion I was brought up in, means learner. So we're lifelong learners, and that's what we are as surgeons. But I think imparting knowledge and just doing as much as you can, I think, is just something that, again, is because it makes me happy. So I won't do something that doesn't make me happy. I'll give it a go and then I'll say no. But I think that really I don't feel extraordinary. I still do feel like the happy person that has forged a happy path for herself thanks to her own confidence and developed integrity and resilience, which you don't get given. You have to learn for yourself. And nobody else can give that to you. You know, having a great mum and dad, having a great wife, having great teachers, they can't teach you what it's like to fail and then pick yourself up. And that's something that I just can do very well because I've had to. Not getting my A levels, you know, not passing every exam the first time, maybe because I was partying a bit too much. So I think when you get to a point where you are listened to, where people actually listen to what you say for a middle child that probably wasn't heard enough, that's a big deal. But I use my voice really to the best of my ability, and I just want to make sure that I lift as I rise. And I think that's something that really stuck with me, the Maya Angelou, I think it's Maya Angelou, but great quote, lift as you rise. So I do a lot of work experience with students who want to apply for medical school. I have student doctors that come and train. And every now and then I get a really lovely card. And one really stuck with me, which was a young, newly qualified doctor who came and joined me in my operating list. And I let her scrub in and very, very supervised, do tiny bits of the operation that I was doing. And, you know, a week later to get a card from her to say, this has been the best week of my life. And you don't know how important it is for me to have a woman that looks like me doing that job, because that's the job I want. And that is, I mean, that would inspire anyone, but that's kind of, you can't see it, but it's a card I have above my desk at home because that
No.
kind of stuff inspires me.
And I think never more than right here, right now, you can't be what you can't see. I know you personally maybe didn't have that as a role model, but clearly the role and as a mentor of what you're doing now is so
Yeah.
powerful.
And I'm very aware that if I didn't have this education and if I didn't have Arlene Dior, consultant surgeon after my name, and perhaps if I didn't have elocution lessons when I was 10, sorry to that teacher because I'm very Essex, but if I didn't speak a certain way, it's so true, isn't it? It will never leave me. But if I didn't speak a certain way and I didn't have that title, I still wouldn't be heard in lots of places. So I've got to damn well use it.
How did you first hear about the Women of the Future program, the Asian Women of Achievement Awards, and what inspired you to get involved?
So, interestingly enough, I'd heard about it because I'd seen things on social media. But if I'm honest, I thought this was just for really amazing women, and I didn't know how one became part of it, which is a bit of a shame. But, you know, it's not something getting awards and things is not something that I would put myself forward for. But when a patient who has become a good friend does it, it means a huge amount. And that's when I really understood what the Asian Women of Achievement Awards were, and then really got into looking at what I might be able to help with in the Women of the Future. I just thought, what an amazing organisation.
Okay, so I have some quick fire questions just to finish with. They're never normally quick fire, but we can give it a go. So, what would you
Okay.
describe as your greatest success?
My greatest success is standing up for myself. Because I think I could say winning an amazing award, and I could say becoming a surgeon, but actually just standing up for myself my whole life has actually stood me in good stead.
And your greatest failure.
Gosh, so many. My greatest failure could have been not getting into medical school the first time, not passing every exam. I would actually say my greatest failure was this, not actually coming out to my parents as a gay woman until I was 40 something because of the
Wow.
things that my brother had said to me. And that's my greatest failure, because I've just told you about how much I stand up for myself, and yet not being able to tell my parents or stand up for myself in the Asian community as a gay woman is the biggest regret of my life. I'm glad I did it when I did do it, but I got the response that I expected, which was not positive. And so I should have just done it earlier, be done with it, and then got on and lived my life. But that is a failure that I ended up managing to do.
But that's the thing about failure now, isn't it? It makes you stronger. I know every time I fail all the
Definitely.
time at like various things. And
Yeah.
you actually,
Yes.
the way you manage your response to failure, or how you react to the person involved or the people involved or whatever you're interplaying with,
Yeah.
that is almost the bit about what I was saying about strength of character. That's what
Totally.
helps build that.
Totally. And I think maybe I just failed enough in my life to realize that nothing really would affect what I was doing at that age. I'm glad I didn't come out to them when I was 15, because my life may have been very different. But I think you're right. Failure leads to resilience and increasing your confidence if you believe in yourself and you've got good people around you. Definitely.
Absolutely. The mantra of Woman of the Future is kindness and collaboration. What does that mean to you in both your personal and professional life?
I think those words and that mantra is key. I think not only in personal success, but in leadership and in teamwork anyway. And I mentioned earlier that actually, if you prioritize kindness in yourself, then you get the best out of people. And people have been kind to me, so I know it works. But I think that through kindness, collaboration improves. I think you get better teams, you get better leaders who are kind. But I think that I would say kindness creates a happy environment, whether it's at home or at work. And I'm very lucky that I have a very kind wife, because she puts up with me, but she has brought up, and I've had a little bit to do with it, an incredibly kind young man. And I think that's really important in British society, is kind men being brought up by kind women. Because we're all leaders in some patch of what we do. So I'm all in to the Women of the Future mantra, all in.
Is there anything that scares you?
I have to say, I do have a snake phobia, but that's it. And I don't know why I have a snake phobia. Thanks, London Zoo, aged eight.
Indiana Jones.
No, I, yeah, no, can't
No.
watch it. Can't watch any of that, anything that might have a snake on telly. I think that, again, going back to my mum, who, well, you know, a big important part of my upbringing, I was brought up to not be scared of anything. And that's part of being a Sikh and being a lion and roaring. I'm not afraid of any person. I'm not afraid of a situation, because I've learned that actually, through kindness and collaboration, you can get yourself out of a lot of scrapes and a lot of failures. So I'm not really scared of anything, but don't put a snake in a room, because then you'll see what fear is.
What's left on your to-do list?
Oh, so much, but I don't know what that is yet, because I'm not driven in a particular path. I've got to the point where I am fortunate to have the skills to help a lot of women and men with breast cancer. My aim is to find a balance, perhaps, but I'm going to carry on taking any opportunity that comes my way. So I will just carry on being me, and at some point, hopefully, have a healthy retirement. I don't have a checklist, I'm afraid. I'm one of those people that will just go for whatever's coming around the corner.
Arlene, you have been absolutely amazing. Thank you so much. You really lifted my
Oh,
spirits,
thank
and you're so
you.
inspiring to listen to your story.
Oh,
You
gosh,
are an
thank you.
incredible human being, and thank you for taking the time. I appreciate you're an incredibly busy woman, so I really appreciate it. And it's been lovely, lovely, lovely speaking to you.
Kim, thank you. So lovely. And you said at the start you like to chat, and I hope I just haven't gone off piece too much, but it's been really lovely to chat to you. And I am going to listen to the other amazing podcasts and part of this Women of the Future. They're brilliant.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Woman of the Future podcast. If you enjoyed it, please hit the subscribe button. And while you're there, why not give us a rating and review? You know you want to. For more about the Women of the Future Awards network and initiative, please visit www.womenofthefuture.co.uk. See you soon.